Central Time, which means this is Pillars of Franchising, broadcasting the secrets of success in franchising to you. So we're here. This is Fred McMurray, and my co-host is Ray Pillar. How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. We're finally having some left coast weather. It's actually beautiful, breezy, sunny, 77 degrees. And it's better than what we have been having, which was in the 90s. It's crazy hot outside. And I know some people say, oh, just the 90s, you know? Yeah, with a lot of humidity with that. We've had a lot of rain. But how are things going on the left coast, Fred?
Well, it's kind of overcast today, somewhat cloudy, but it's low 70s, perfect hoodie weather. And last night, as I was recovering from the food poisoning, I saw a whale go past the office. So it's beautiful.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Nice day, huh?
I love it. It is.
Well, you finally get a nice day. You know, of course, here in the Midwest, we always enjoy excellent weather, except for...
Except for 7 months of the year. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Sadly,
what can I tell you?
I've actually seen the construction season going here, which that's one of Chicago's two, you know, seasons, winter and construction.
Yep.
Been annoying the hell out of me
here,
but that's okay.
But that's all over, no matter where you go. I think there's a tremendous amount of road construction going on everywhere. Everywhere I've traveled, I've run into it. It seems like every road I travel, I'm running into it. So it's nothing unusual. So we have a guest today, and his name is Larry Broughton. How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, great to have you.
Thanks.
Yeah, same here.
So,
great to have you.
Right. So just as a bit of prequel, I originally got to interview Larry, I don't know, seems like 100 years ago. It was probably about 8 years ago. Just
be careful. Just hey.
Hey, that's just my age. And he was speaking at the Elite Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Business Network. And you know me, most speakers put me to sleep. But I'm sitting there listening to him. And he started to talk about after he was out of the military. And if I remember right, Larry, you were working as an overnight clerk in a hotel.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah, I was a night auditor. I went in at 11 o'clock at night and got off at 7 in the morning. Yes.
Uh-huh. And you seem to one night have had an epiphany. Am I correct? If my memory doesn't serve me and you said, what the hell am I doing this for? I could be running
on It didn't happen exactly like that, but it was a weird situation. You know, I spent a bunch of years in the military, as you said. I was in special forces and was able to kind of travel the world doing that and living a life of adventure and building great bonds with people and learning about leadership and all that kind of stuff. And while I was deployed overseas a couple of times, I remember it hitting me like, wow, if these knuckleheads can run these countries, I can run a country. How hard can it be? right. And so after, you know, so I decided I was going to get out and maybe, you know, get into the political arena or get into the State Department or maybe run for political office one day. And so that's kind of how I got into the hotel business, is because it was my first job out of the military. You know, I worked that overnight shift and then went to school during the day. And, it didn't take very long before I started to realize that this whole being an employee person, although it's great and we all need, people who are going to be, doing those tasks and services, real wealth and real freedom was going to come from business ownership. And so, I've had a lot of epiphanies in my life. But, that was one of them. In the Tenderloin in San Francisco. It was a little no-tell motel at the time. Yeah. he laughs like he knows what a no-tell motel is. I won't even probe beyond that one, okay?
Interesting. So, we'll have to go into that in a later show.
So, Larry, let me get this straight. So you acted, you were a clerk and then at a hotel, and that gave you all the experience you needed to go out and buy a whole bunch of other hotels?
No, no. See, there was a long process in there. And I think that what you just described is a classic mistake that a lot of business owners make. And that is that they either have zero experience in the industry, or they think because they've been successful in another industry that that's easily going to be transferable to another one. Now, I wrote a book, maybe 6 years ago, that second edition just came out in, I think it was April or May, called Victory. There's a chapter in that called on Intel, you know, doing research, doing background checks or background on your industry. What I ended up doing is working in the industry for several years, becoming a partner in a company. So I had great resources, and I learned from the inside before I went out and did it on my own. I wouldn't recommend anybody, you know, work as a one position in an industry for a few months before they launch into it. You've really got to do your research. You know, that kind of leads to a lot of the classic mistakes that people make. And I think that's why there's so many business failures. I mean, that among other things, but you got to do intel. And it's one of the things I like what you guys do with your show is you focus on franchising and developing systems, because systems lead to success. And that's why, yes. You know, franchising is basically business in a box, right? You know, mm-hmm. Someone else has done all the heavy lifting for you. They've learned what the classic mistakes are. Follow these systems, and we're going to help you avoid some of the roadblocks and hurdles.
Great.
And that experience, one of the experiences I had was that my first real job was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and that's why I never wanted to go into the food business.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. Now, at a young age, I don't know. You know, my first real job was as a stock boy at a department store until they realized I wasn't old enough to be working there. And so that was a short gig. But then once I turned whatever the youngest legal age to work in New York was with a work permit, I became a dishwasher at a restaurant. And I was there for a few months before I applied at McDonald's. That was my first full-time job, and they paid a nickel more an hour than I was making at the dishwasher position. Big bucks back then. And
yeah.
worked my way up and became a manager at McDonald's. And then it was after that, after a couple years after high school, that I ended up going into the military. But what I loved about places like McDonald's is I could see that, I mean, I knew early on that McDonald's wasn't a hamburger place, right? When you've got these multi-million dollar businesses that are basically being operated by, you know, high school kids and a couple people that are in their early 20s and a manager, you know, not much older than that, then I realized, wow, there's something to this. You know, this is actually scalable. And so I try those lessons kind of have always been in my mind.
Yeah, because they had strong systems in place.
That's right. Yeah. Well, listen, you know, it doesn't matter how big your business gets. The real value comes from the systems that are in it. You know, so if somebody walks up to me today and said, "Hey, Larry, I'm going to give you this crazy number to buy your business, but here's the caveat: you need to walk away tomorrow, and the company still needs to run." If I don't have systems in place, the value of that business has just been diminished radically. You know, if all of the information is carried around in my brain, I've diminished the value of the business.
Yes, yes. That's one of the things we talk about on the show is what are you going to do after the business? And if you've got these systems in place, you can transfer that business to anybody.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yep, love that.
Mm-hmm. So have you contemplated passing on your business? Have you started – or is it you're just going to leave it to the next generation?
The hotel company. I've got a couple of different businesses. But, yeah, on the hotel side, I'm probably approached a couple times a year, somebody who wants to buy it, and I'm just not ready for that. We have just recently, like in the last few months, made a big announcement to the hospitality industry that we have partnered with a large hotel company out of the UK called Bespoke. They're the largest operator of independent hotels in the UK, and we are going to be their operating partner for hotels here. That's going to fuel our growth here in the States. We have about, you know, depending on how you count it, about 20 hotels in the portfolio or pipeline now. And so we'll have a pretty fast growth trajectory here in the next few years. But I'm always, how should I put this? I have no desire to sell, but it's available. You know what I mean? I'm always working as if, because who knows? Let's say I don't sell, but let's say, God forbid, I get hit by a car or I come down with some illness. This company still needs to keep going. And if for no other reasons, I have investors and I have team members that I need to take care of. And so we're always looking at how do we have systems in place. So if somebody came and offered me, you know, $1 billion tomorrow, yeah, I'd probably, you know, consider it.
Somebody offered me $1 billion tomorrow, I'd take it.
Well, I said I said cabillion. I didn't say billion. I said cabillion.
Well, I'd go for $1 billion. My rule is, somebody offers me $1 billion, I take it.
That's a good rule, actually. That's a writer down.
By virtue of the fact you have many different hotels and other businesses, it says something that you have to have systems in place, because you cannot be at each one of these hotels or each one of your businesses 24/7. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, kudos to you. You've got something going good for you.
I'll tell you what I've got going good for me is I've got great team members. And by the way, they say, you know, words have meaning, right? What you won't hear, or will very rarely hear, it might slip across someone's lips. We don't use the word employee in our organization. We call them team members. We don't call them associates. We don't call them clerks. You know, the way I look at it is that people show up with the way you treat them. And so if I treat people like employees, they're going to show up like employees. And when they understand that they are a team member, which means our success or our failure, I mean, we've all played on teams, even if it was just out, you know, in the sandbox or the sandlot, right, playing T-ball. You've been on teams, and so we all have an impact on the success or failure of the organization. And everybody wants to be on a winning team. And so we call them team members. And so the reason I'm able to do what I do is because I've got great leaders and great managers in the organization that are doing the heavy lifting at the properties.
Which brings me to another word, and that's leadership. So is there an assumption on my part saying that you probably gained a lot of knowledge of that when you were Green Beret?
Yeah. I can take anything away from that, it's how to lead and how to build effective teams. What I realize is that people want to be inspired. They want to be on a winning team. And the way you inspire people, and this word is used enough in business, the way you inspire someone is through love. And so the love that we had for each other in Special Forces is unlike anything I'd experienced before. You know, people don't go to war, they don't go to battle because they hate someone. They go because they love their brothers and sisters to the right and left and their family behind them. And we take that same approach here in business. I mean, I just had a rather difficult meeting with one of our senior team members today. And I said, dude, I love you. And this is why we're having this conversation. It's not because I think something's going wrong and I want to jump on you and hate on you. No, it's because I love you and I love the role that you play in the organization. And so it's easier to say that when people they look at themselves, and we treat people as if they're team members and not employees, an employer. Because that's automatically setting up a us against them kind of work environment. And so I think that effective leaders understand that. And in Special Forces, when there's only 12 guys on an A team, and you're deployed in some pretty crazy places, and you're there to be what they call a force multiplier, to build resistance forces or to do whatever, you better be able to leverage relationships. And I think that's one of the keys, too, about effective leadership as well, is the whole command and control style, do things because I said so, doesn't work. We're in this relationship economy, and effective leaders know how to leverage relationships to help team members get closer to their fullest potential. Because when they do that, they become fiercely loyal to you. And, you know, Gallup's State of the American Workforce Survey shows that every year.
Mm-hmm. And they will work beyond your expectations.
Oh, my gosh.
Beyond what they think they can do, as soon as you reward them and saying, you know, how much you love them and how much you know that they can do at least X amount, they usually end up exceeding that.
That is so true if we give them the freedom to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of leaders, or I'm using air quotes there, let's use the word managers, ineffective leaders, who will say things like, do it this way and this is what I expect, and they stop there. Right.
Yeah.
What we try to do in our organization is say, we, first of all, you know, we brainstorm it, we come up with consensus, and we say, okay. And then I say, here's what my expectations are. And then sidebar for a second, because if people don't know what your expectations are, they're not going to meet them. And so I say, here's what I expect or better. When people just start performing to that goal of what my expectation is, then that's what they're going to shoot for. But if I say, I want this or better, it gives them freedom and creativity to really push the boundaries.
Yes. Yes. But you got to give them, you got to give them that freedom to do that. You got to let go of the reins and let them have that freedom to go where they can.
So true. So true. And that's where I think a lot of business owners get hamstrung, is that they're so fearful that someone's going to make a mistake that they hamstring people.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes guts. It takes courage to do that. And my big thing is courage changes everything. When we have the courage to let our team members make mistakes, but then you, here in the military, what we would do after every training exercise, after every mission, we would do what they call an AAR, an after action review. And we didn't place blame, but before we went and took showers, before we went home to mama, we would sit down and do this. We'd ask each other, without placing blame, what did we do right, what did we do wrong, and how can we do it better the next time? And so we do that in our organization after every significant hire, after a significant termination, after we launch a marketing initiative, after we take on a new property. And that way we're always constantly learning. You know, I touched earlier just a second ago about the State of the American Workforce survey by the Gallup organization. And what they show, you guys may know this, but maybe some of the listeners don't, that each year what they show, and the number rarely changes a point or two, but 67% of the American workforce, that would be 67% of our team members and coworkers, are either disengaged or actively disengaged. Think about that. 67% of your workforce is disengaged or actively disengaged, right? Well, what they found is, which means, hey, boss, when's payday? Hey, when's vacation time? Thank God it's Friday. That kind of attitude. Or they're actively stealing from you, right? Those are disengaged and actively disengaged. But when you peel back the survey, what they found is that the reason is that most team members don't feel like they're being professionally developed in the organization. They don't feel like there's any training. They don't feel like they're becoming a better version of themselves. And that they just feel like they're a cog in the wheel. That's sad. That's sad. And so I feel like as a leader, we have a moral obligation to help people get closer to their fullest potential. And you're right, that when they do that, they become very loyal to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And on that, Ray, on that note, you know what time it is. It's time for our first sponsor. Yeah. So you can call in with questions at 323-580-5755. We want to thank the Link Local Network for hosting us. And now a word from our first sponsor, assuming Fred can hit the button right, which it appears not.
Ever wonder how successful business people get educated about franchise business options? The Franchise Consulting Company is a group of over 100 franchise professionals with more than 2,000 years of franchise experience. We help our clients select and investigate franchise companies. And like a realtor, our services are free of charge to you. Our fees are paid by the seller. Reach out to us to learn more and get a free copy of the Franchise MBA, the number one bestseller and highest reviewed book on Amazon in the franchise category. Our website is thefranchiseconsultingcompany.com, or feel free to call us on 800-321-6072.
And we're back to you, Ray.
So one of the things that came to mind during that commercial was that we have our daily management meetings, and we talk about the good, bad, and the ugly. But when we talk about the bad, it's not from a negative connotation. We talk about it from, okay, this happened. Now, what can we learn from this? how can we, you know, make it either not happen again or improve on how it happened so it becomes a positive thing instead of a negative thing. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I think a good coach will do, you know, with his people.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. Here's the thing that I've learned over the years, and we do something similar to that, is that we give people permission to make mistakes. And we really encourage people and give people permission to admit their mistakes. The worst thing we can have for team members is to start hiding them, right? And so the promise I make to people is you're not going to get fired for making a mistake. You're not. There will be problems if you keep making that same mistake over and over again. But we're going to use this as a mistake that somewhere, if you're making a mistake, something is not right. Either you're working outside your strength, or we didn't give you the tools to do it, or we launched too early. There's usually reasons why mistakes are made, unless it's just carelessness, right? So we just try to give people permission to make mistakes. Because, listen, innovation is not going to happen without making mistakes, without failing, without change.
That's right.
And so we got to encourage them.
They're not taking enough of a chance. One of the things that I like to tell people is when something happens, stop pointing outward and take that finger and turn it 180 degrees and point it inward and see what could I have done that, you know, could have prevented that.
Yeah.
So, Ray?
That.
Ray?
Yes.
Does this mean you're telling people to take their finger and shove it?
Well, down their throat, maybe. Not the end you're thinking about.
I didn't specify, my friend. So, there's a comment you guys were talking about earlier before this, when you're talking about processes, needing to have processes in place. So, when. Assuming you're going to go in and take over a hotel, buy a new hotel, or even with this deal with Bespoke, congratulations.
Thank you.
What's the first two or three processes you'd look at as you go in there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, when you buy any business, you have the due diligence period, right? And so it's during that time we just start turning over every stone that we can. We usually start with the financials because I think that that's one place to really uncover deficiencies. We look at market penetration and we look at team member turnover. Because I think too often in businesses, all we look at is lagging indicators, right? Which means you're looking in the rearview mirror. What I have found over the years in my coaching business and just working with entrepreneurs, it's sad, but honestly, most small businesses don't even do monthly financial statements. They don't do profit and loss statements. But what we found, oh, by the way, another thing that we look at, if we can get it, and oftentimes we can't, except through online surveys, is we try to measure client satisfaction. And by the way, that's a little cue I just gave there as well. We try not to use the word customer, but we use the word client. To me, customers are transactional, which means buy this once and then I've got to go out and try to sell it again. I'd rather have clients that are relational. So I think if we just change that in people's minds as well, I don't care whether it's, working at McDonald's, a patron or a client, I think it's a better way to look at it than a customer. Anyway, so the reason that we measure client satisfaction is that how willing are they to refer us to someone else? If they're willing to refer us, we've done our job, right? And they're willing to, most likely willing to come back. If we measure team member satisfaction and team member turnover, what's that tell us? Well, we know one of the most expensive parts of running a business is team member turnover, right? And we've mentioned the food industry a couple of times, and in the food industry, turnover is over 100% in most businesses. Crying out loud, if we can just get that down to 70%, what kind of savings do you realize each year? We look at the financial statement, obviously, because we want to see how efficient is the place being run. And when we can dive into it, then, you know, we can really figure out, do we need to put in a new purchasing system? Are we just, do we have bad contracts in place? But a financial statement will really give you insight into whether our system's set up or not. And then once we are in there, the first thing we do is we have a team meeting with all of the current team members, and we let them know what our expectations are, that we're here to support you. Our job is not to come in and, you know, crack the whip, but we just start interviewing every team member. We ask them just tons of questions, because the team members are closer to the business than even the business owner. So we really find out what's going on when we start interviewing team members. So that's kind of the stuff that we look at every time we go in and take over and take on a new project or bring somebody into the fold. That answer your question?
Yeah, I wish you could have gone a bit slower so I could have put a more of a bullet point set of notes for publication later. But that's okay.
We'll have to go back. We'll slow the thing down. Now you got to remember, yeah, I speak kind of quickly. I get that. Yeah, I will slow down going forward.
That's okay. I'll just bother your executive admin, who, you know.
There you go. She'll love it.
She'll love it. So and so. One thing that just we want to say really quick is tomorrow's Larry's birthday, so you got to wish him happy birthday on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram. And if you're not following him on Instagram, you should be. You can get a hold of him that way.
Yeah, you had to stalk me for a little while on Instagram. You didn't really stalk me, but you did remind me a couple of times, hey, dude, you said you were going to come on your show or on my show. When are you going to do it again? Yeah. I'm sorry.
My favorite was the bucket list one. That was, I thought, my best answer.
That closed the deal. That closed the deal for me.
All right. So we're about to lose Larry. Larry, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, you kind of mentioned it. You know, I've got a website. So like I said, I've got a bunch of different businesses. And the easy way to find me is through my website, which is larrybroughton.me. Larrybroughton.me. But, you know, I spend a lot of time on Instagram. I'm rarely on Facebook anymore these days. But I use Instagram and LinkedIn, not just for my own stuff, but I use it as a training tool for our team members, all of our directors, all our supervisors, managers, directors, executives. You know, we follow each other, and I just put out, you know, daily tidbits, little memes on, I hope, thought-provocative topics on leadership, entrepreneurship, and team building.
Somebody who spends an inordinate amount of time on social media for clients. I love the. I use your Instagram account as an example of things to do to my clients.
Thanks. Yeah, we spend a lot of time on that. As I said, if it were just me kind of like shouting in an echo chamber, it would be worthless. But as I said, we have. I have team members, like hourly team members who follow me there. I've got our managers and leaders. And the whole idea of this, and it's just a tip for your listeners, if you're a business owner or a leader, why not use these social media platforms to be speaking about your culture and expectations so that when people are following you, they kind of get insight of what you're expecting. And so we have, you know, team members and managers who will print out an Instagram meme and use that as a teaching point at their next team meeting. So I'm glad you do that. Thanks for saying that.
Hey, I love it. Like I said, you're one of the few people who gets it right.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, Larry, you're a fascinating person. I want to thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. And let me know if you ever want me back. Be glad to do it.
Oh, yeah, don't worry.
And by the way, the reason you guys have the best intro music in the industry. When you're using Bachman Turner Overdrive to introduce your show, I mean, you're doing something right, dudes.
Wow, can't get better than that. I'm done.
No,
this is the last show forever. We hit our peak, Ray. We hit the freaking peak. I'm done with this. There's only one.
Mic drop.
Exactly. Don't worry, we're going to be on the show. You can't get rid of me this easily. After all, I walked into Ray's office 7 years ago, and he looked at me and said, "You're not going to sell me Twitter, are you?"
And he capitulated, didn't he? Knuckled under.
Well, yeah. 18 months later, he called me back and said, "Okay, I'm ready for Twitter," but that's okay.
The Twitter. Yeah.
So, thank you, sir. It's an honor to have a real American hero on the show.
Oh, my gosh.
That
makes me blush. But thank you, Fred. Thank you, Ray. I appreciate it. I love what you guys are doing. Keep doing this, because, boy, we need this. You know, it's really going to be the business owner, the entrepreneur who's going to change the trajectory of this country. You know, Washington is not going to save us. I don't care who's in the White House. I don't care who you elect to office. It's going to be, you know, the man and woman on the street running businesses that's going to, you know, save this country.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, my friends.
All right. All right, we'll be
thanks, Larry.
Talking soon, Larry. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, guys. All right, bye.
All right, Ray. Didn't that rock?
It rocked. I tell you. You're getting good, Fred.
I
guess.
It took me a while to sit. You know, like you heard, I stalked him for a while, and the bucket list one was my favorite of the I think it was to do this and to annoy you so much that you finally show up on, you schedule time for the Pillars, which, as you heard, was the one that sold it. So, yes, as we both know, I'm a phenomenal business stalker. So, our next guest is Leland Forst. He works with the Franchise Consulting Company. He's along inside what you normally do, Ray, is franchising. Obviously, he helps people get franchises. So, Leland, say hello.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Leland.
Good to talk to you today.
So, do you normally set the bar really high for people to come in afterwards? Is that the challenge you create for us? Is that it?
Yeah, it's like following an animal act.
Right? Yeah. Sure. Is there anything left to say?
No.
How about I just say ditto and we're done, okay?
I know the feeling.
Well, yeah. When you know the expression, when all is said and done, I keep talking. Well, you know, there's nothing more to be said here. You know, we're done.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay. Well,
sorry.
We said it all.
All right.
Thanks, thanks for being on the show.
It was my pleasure. Maybe we could do it again sometime.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be on as the second guest after the next time we have Larry on.
Can I go before Larry and kind of set the stage for him and, you know, make him look even better?
Yeah, the starter band. What do they call,
exactly.
They call that?
The warm-up, whatever it is.
The warm-up band.
Back. Yeah. I'm sorry, gentlemen. Go ahead.
No, that's... So, as you may have heard, I was falling asleep watching featured speakers at the one convention, and Larry picked me up when he said I was working night shift, and it's like, ooh, Fred learned something. How bizarre. So, tell us about...
So, you know, next time...
Franchise.
Next time, if you're willing, I'd love to do a little, back and forth with Larry, kind of counterpoint. What was that show that used to do that? If you're willing to, I'd love to do that.
Fred?
Larry, you got anything to say on that?
I think he left us.
He ran. Okay.
I don't know. I thought he was still there, but he may not be. So that's cool.
It's all right. Anyway,
we're gonna have one of these days. I'm gonna schedule a whole bunch of folks on the. So we're working on a next generation of technology where we'll be able to use Zoom as a dial-in for the guests. So. Get that up. We're going to have a really big, long show and have a whole bunch of past guests in and make it a real food fight. Yeah, Fred.
That's right. That's what we need.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like fun. I haven't had one of those since I was in high school.
He said so.
So Fred, can people dial in now?
Oh, yes, they can, and I should probably do another whatchamacallit. So people can dial in at 323-580-5755. We want to thank the Link Local Network. And let's play another sponsor.
Ooh.
If we can do it this time.
Hey, franchise owners. Does the marketing that corporate provides for your franchise go far enough? Do you struggle to get local clients to call or come through your door? At Mediavine Marketing, we love working with franchises like yours to personalize and localize your marketing efforts through social media sites like Facebook or Instagram, in emails to your current and past customers, with Facebook or Google Ads, and whiteboard animation videos. Contact Mediavine Marketing today at 805-265-5440 or go to MediavineMarketing.com. That's 805-265-5440. Mediavine Marketing. We know franchises, and we want to help yours grow.
And we're back, Ray. Take it away.
Yes. Well, I was just wondering, so right now you're a consultant with the Franchise Consulting Company.
Correct.
And I also noticed that, and I've never heard of a CKO before, but what is a CKO of 42 Stats?
Well, CKO is a Chief Knowledge Officer. And the role of a Chief Knowledge Officer is to prevent becoming insulated in one's mindset and one thought pattern, to think that there's only one solution and only one way of doing things. And my analogy is, when you look through a funnel, most people look through the large end to the small end. And the challenge is for most of us in business to think the other way. Look through the small end to the large end and try and identify alternatives and options that haven't yet been considered, and challenge yourself as to why haven't they been, and what opportunities do they present.
Okay. And what is 42 Stats?
42 Stats is a measurement-based data service that focuses on three areas, primarily activity-based costing, because most companies don't really have detailed understanding of the work that is being done at the activity level, how much it's costing them, and how they could aggregate or optimize that work. The second area is what Larry touched on, which is customer or client satisfaction, but not just stopping there, going on to customer experience and customer delight and measuring that, both internally for internal users as well as external clients. And thirdly is looking at employee commitment. And you heard him talk about the 67%. Well, there's a lot of reasons why employees are not committed and to the work that they do and to their organizations. Measuring it, quantifying it, and then understanding the basis for that allows you to work on it.
And basically what you're doing now, though, is you're helping people who are looking for a business, and you're applying some of this knowledge that you have with the company you have, 42 Stats, as a CKO, in helping them find the right business for them. Is that correct?
That is correct. But in my prior life, before I did 42 Stats, I was a consultant that developed a concept called shared services, which I woke up one day and realized that it helped the Global 500 put thousands of people out of work. And I realized, what is it that those people are now going to do? Because companies aren't going to expand and hire, where do they go and what do they do? And so I decided to come to the light side, and help people to take on meaningful opportunities, franchises, that they could now control their lives.
And go ahead, Fred. What were you going to say?
This sounds like a question for a point for Fred to ask a question. So,
okay.
You're in Austin.
Yeah,
in Austin.
I am.
So I'll ask you the question about Sixth Street later. And it's been a while since I've been to Austin. Austin
right.
didn't seem to be a very franchise-friendly area, city, and not nearly as bad as San Luis Obispo, but...
It's much more of a incubator type, new .com, new technology, new business-oriented than a franchise-oriented.
All right, so what do you find are, given that it's that type of environment, what do you find most people, or what's, who in that area is most likely to start a franchise or buy a franchise?
Well, you know, at some point people come to understand that the likelihood of success of a new business is the odds are against you. I mean, everybody who thinks that they're going to become the next Dell probably at some point in their life goes through a rude awakening that the odds are against them on that. And so many of these small ventures start out and then don't work, or, you know, there are layoffs or whatever the case may be. And they come to a point, and particularly after, it's not so much the new .coms and the new business. It's more the people who've been in corporations for a while. The people who've been at Dell 20 years, or the people who have been at St. David's, or the people who have been at these companies, who get to the point where they want to take control of their lives, they want to do something different. And when they realize that they have the opportunity and the wherewithal to do that, they find it exciting and liberating.
It is.
Okay.
It is liberating. And most people, in my experience, if you've been in finance, when you think about franchising, your first thought is, I'm going to do something in finance. Or if you've been in cost reduction. Or if you've been in medical, you think of medical. It takes a while in the process to get people to kind of undo the boundaries that they've set for themselves, and for them to really appreciate that they can do anything that they want now. And I've had people from insurance go into dog-related franchises. And I've had people in corporate real estate who go into lacrosse sports franchising. When they make that kind of leap, that passage, that they have the opportunity now to do what they want and for what they have passion, that's a great thing to watch, and it's a great experience to go through, in my opinion.
It is.
So kind of like Ray going from tech to toilets.
Yes. You know, we asked them that question. We asked them the question in their status quo. If you found a franchise that affords you everything you want, but it's in the port-a-toilet business, would you do it, or is that something you just couldn't do? And, you know, there's a lot of hesitation, but I'd say 90% say we would do it. I don't know that they really mean it, but they say they would do it.
So you said organization. So am I wrong, or do you have a degree in organizational theory?
I do have a degree in organizational theory. Yes, a PhD.
And, a doctor of organizational theory. Ooh, great.
Yeah.
We're Green Berets, PhDs. We're rocking today.
We got them all covered.
Yeah.
Our next guest is really going to have the toilet to clean when, because he's really getting kind of screwed in the long run. But we won't go into that.
Mm.
So, how with your if you're a doctor, PhD in organizational theory,
yeah,
do you have a company that deals with that type of thing? Because I wouldn't think you were dealing with that in the franchise consultancy.
No, I did for many years, since 91 actually. I had a management consulting company called the Amherst Group. And that is where we focused on work and trying to understand organizations and how they thought about work and how better to do work than the way they were doing it today. And I won't bore you with more than that. But that led to the creation of the concept of shared services, which has been adopted globally. and, you know, it's a great thing to have watched, but really negative consequences to people and employees and managers.
So what is shared services?
Shared services, think about this. Many companies perform like work in multiple places throughout the organization. Mm. This approach says we need to leverage that work by finding ways to bring it together, to allow people to become experts in it, to devote more of their time to it. You know, in the 80s, we had this concept of the jack of all trades and the master of none. Shared services takes the opposite approach and says, we really need subject matter experts who can have a degree of accuracy and knowledge about the work that they're doing. So across finance, HR, procurement, real estate, facilities, the SG&A functions, it says, let's look at how we can bring that work together, have a fewer number of people doing it, spending more of their time, understand what their customers and users need from them, and deliver that which will enable them to do what they need to do to serve the external customer.
So one of the theories I use in my organization is that everybody is trained on everything, but we do have SMEs or subject matter experts in each individual thing. And of course, they, you know, that person is the go-to person for a particular problem. But everybody in my organization pretty much knows how to do everybody else's job. Is that, you know, fall into any of your theories?
Well, that would be more towards the orientation of the jack of all trades and the master of none, seemingly. But without knowing more, we try to work in the opposite direction of that. But that, you know, it depends on the environment. If you're talking about, we're talking about plus billion-dollar companies here. And
we're talking about
companies that have multiple divisions, multiple, you know, locations and geographies. And many, I liken them to aircraft carriers. When they really shouldn't be aircraft carriers, they could get their services that they need elsewhere from a single or a specified location. They don't need to do it all themselves. They need to do what they need to do to serve, build their products, and serve their external customers. We had an orientation in the past where everybody wanted to be presidents, and in reality, not everybody needs to be a president and have everything reporting to them. There are things that others can do for them better than what they could do for themselves, because in large part, they don't measure what they have, and they don't know how well it's performing or how well it should be performing.
So it's a matter of proportion to the size of the company.
I
definitely could see that. Yeah.
Right. So there's a degree of reasonableness in this, and it's not meant to be a placebo that applies everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, definitely for larger, you know, very large corporations, you definitely need SMEs. Otherwise, you know, you're really diluting what you need to know.
Well, and that, yes, you are. Plus, if people are only spending 10 or 20% of their time on something, you have to begin to ask yourself, so what is their degree of accuracy? What is their quality on this? How quickly can and effectiveness on it versus they have to go back, they have to remember something, it's trying to take into consideration those kinds of factors.
Absolutely.
And you know, think about it from a franchising standpoint. You know, when you open a franchise, almost by definition, you have a dedicated focus for what you're doing, and there are a great many things that you no longer focus on. that are kind of outside that. And so many things that the franchisor will take over for you or do for you to allow you to focus your efforts on either the marketing, the business development, the operational, the delivery piece, or whatever, depending on the franchise. So some of that is...
What is sort of common knowledge is that you, when you start a business on your own or a franchise, then basically you wear all the hats. You're the accountant, and you're the guy who hires the vendors. You're the guy who does the marketing and all the other hats that are involved in that. As your business begins to grow, then you begin to, and I think this is what you're saying, you say, well, accounting is not my expertise. It was great at X amount of dollars for my business, but now I need to hire an accountant.
Right.
Or now I need to hire a marketing person. And that's
right.
Where Fred comes in. Fred?
Fred.
Wow, I didn't even have to prompt him for that. He's getting real good at this. You're getting real good at this, right?
So, as my business began to grow, I hired an accountant and Fred.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you, Fred. Number,
and everything took off from there,
number
right?
16? Well, yeah. When I met him, he was number 16. He's number 9th in the nation now. I'll claim
eighth.
That.
Eighth.
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 Ah,
I moved up.
Fred, I hope you have your percentage commissions based on your fees based on his number and ranking.
Now you tell me that.
That's okay. I don't charge him for hosting the show.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Man, that was such a good idea. I wish I'd said that 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while. It's been a while. Most definitely.
So, all right. So we won't talk about marketing after the call because, as Ray said, that's one of my favorite topics. Others have said I'm obsessed about it. Either way, as I've been looking at your LinkedIn profile, you used a phrase of that you said the net impact of what you do is rebuilding the world one life, one business at a time. And I really like that. It really hit me. That was a great belief saying. How'd you come up with that?
It's actually stolen shamelessly. I didn't come up with it on my own, in all fairness. But, you know, I thought about it because we are dealing with one person, one client at a time. And in our workings with them, you know, we're really able to have an impact with them and through them. And it does, you know, it does have an impact on changing the world, you know, because what we do with that person then has an influence and expands the impact on others. And so the ripple effect is great. And you don't have to have 50 people in a room to have an impact. And I think a lot of times we lose sight that we think it's a numbers game, and it's how many people we're dealing with at one time. And while that sounds attractive and kind of seductive, I pull myself back to think, no, the one person that I'm having the call with today and the person who's looking at what they're looking at in their opportunities, that's where I'm having my impact, and I take satisfaction from that.
Wow. I think you really just increased the bar for Doug, who's coming on next.
Doug
paying
and I
it
are
forward,
good friends.
Aren't you there?
Doug and I are good friends.
So we'll bring Doug on in a moment.
Okay.
But what I want to ask you is Ray's normal question is how do people get a hold of you?
You know, more often than not, good question.
Wow, stumper there.
It is a stumper because most often it is through referral. It is not me reaching out. It is a referral from someone I've worked with that brings a person to me. And you know, I take that as a sign, a validation of having done good work. And sometimes you're sitting there going, you know, I wish more referrals would take place. But in all honesty, it's the referral of others that that brings people to me.
Okay, I can't argue that. Ray, you got any last questions? Otherwise,
we want you to stay on the line.
Well, there's something that you know, kind of Leland mentioned something about releasing people's boundaries and. And I think that's one of the things that a person who finds himself in a position to be looking to either start a business or a franchise will either realize that he's going to find himself in or does find himself in. And I was wondering if Leland could kind of expound upon that a little bit, because I found that an interesting statement.
Well, thank you. People, you know, we all get through our lives, we begin to, I don't mean this in a negative way, but more often than not, we kind of pigeonhole ourselves, or we come up with one-line descriptions. Whenever people ask you, you meet new people, what do? You know, often we talk about it in terms of the work we perform, et cetera. Not who we are, but what we do. And if we can change that to more of a focus on, so who are we and what are we about and, you know, what makes us happy and what in effect turns us on, that's what I want people to be thinking about and getting out of that pigeonhole or that silo to think beyond that. Because I think all of us are much more than what we do. Well, I would hope anyway. I suppose there are some people. I'm thinking about, you know, the guy who owns Tesla. You know, maybe that's all he is. It's Tesla. I don't know. But and that's something to be proud of in its own right. But most of us are not of that ilk. And if we could see ourselves in a different light, in an expanded light, I think it gives us the room and the license to be who we want to be, not to be what we were doing. And that's mm-hmm. what I'd like. Mm-hmm. That boundary or that definition in which we corral ourselves, if we can make that more permeable, that we can move in and out of that with ease, then I think that it gives us something that we can really enjoy and allow us to see ourselves very differently.
This is true. I think sort of an example of that, and I don't know what the statistics are, people who get a degree in a certain particular subject but find themselves in something that's totally different. And I don't know, I would imagine it's a pretty high
mm-hmm.
people who are not in that particular subject that they went to school for.
Right. Probably more than 50% end up in something different.
I think
different.
So. Yeah.
All right, so on that note, let us bring our last guest, who now has to follow Larry Broughton and Dr. Forrest. Doug, how are you doing today? Welcome to Pillars of Franchising.
Thank you. I'm doing excellent. I would have rather gone first because I'm just a simple guy. I grew up in West Virginia, live in South Carolina, and that's me. I don't have a PhD or a Green Beret.
Yeah. Well, I think that's most of us.
Sucks to be you, doesn't it, Doug?
So,
actually, it's great to be me. I've got a great life, so I can't complain.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, really, and not complaining. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
You're You're part of the franchise consulting company as well. Is that correct, Doug?
That's correct. I've been with the franchise consulting company really 2.5 years, but I've been in franchising a little over 14 years, either as a franchise owner or doing coaching and consulting work like I do now or helping franchisors.
And I thought I saw something on there that you do franchise development for ArcPoint Labs.
Yeah, I do. I help them out a little bit. They're based here in Greenville, South Carolina, so they're basically 5 minutes from my house. And they have a really good brand over there, so I help them out some on just not brand development, but helping them find the right franchisees, processes. It's a neat franchise. If somebody's ever looking for a medical labs, drug and alcohol testing franchise, it's a really good model.
So you're the first drug and alcohol testing franchise, we'll say representative, we've had on there. That's within the health and wellness industry, which is, I'm assuming, where that would be considered. Yes, no?
It is. So with ArcPoint, they've got a neat history. You know, they started off in drug and alcohol testing really 20 years ago. They started franchising 10 years ago. And they've grown to the point where they're actually over 100 units throughout the United States, all doing drug and alcohol testing and the services around drug and alcohol testing for either a business environment or state environment or court systems. But then they just opened up the consumer piece where they're now getting into doing high-deductible health care plans where people can come in and say, hey, my doctor says I need this test, but my insurance says it's going to cost this much. Well, ArcPoint takes cash. They don't take insurance, so they can actually charge probably 50% less than what they're going to pay through their insurance. And that's a whole growing industry where people are shopping their lab tests or, you know, getting lab tests online. You don't need a prescription to do lab testing. So they actually have an e-commerce site with right now you can order about 15 different panels. But here in October, you'll be able to order hundreds of things if you wanted to. So people are being more, I guess the word empowered, to go through and look at their health and say, you know, I want to understand this about me, or, hey, I'm feeling fatigued. Why am I feeling fatigued? And order testing and doing things like that.
So when you're saying alcohol testing, it's not like, here, drink all this beer and tell us what you think about it.
No, it's not like WKRP in Cincinnati in that episode. No, it's actually doing drug and alcohol testing to see what's going on with your employee force.
Oh, that was a phenomenal episode. Thank you for reminding me. That's one of my favorite episodes. That's so. Sorry. Greg, go ahead before
no, I. No, me too. I regret. It is, yeah, mine too.
And so I'm looking at LinkedIn, and I see you at one time had a franchise called Pro Martial Arts. How is that helping you out today with your, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. There was just a delay. Go right ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. So, yeah, Ray, go ahead. Repeat your question.
So I noticed you used to have a franchise, Pro Martial Arts. And how's that helping you today with what you're doing?
So Pro Martial Arts was a great franchise for semi-absentee manage the manager for me. We had it for a couple of years, and we actually had it until our first child was born. So I'm 49 and a half years old with a 3.5-year-old daughter, which is great. But it really taught me about management, leadership, when it came to running a business. Because up to that point, you know, I was a small business owner wearing all the hats with my first franchise that I had for 10 years, home-based. So that business taught me a lot when it came to managing employees, right, looking at them being more empowering, having them buy into the system, giving them the freedom that they needed to make good decisions, you know, to run the business. So that helped me out a ton that way.
Mm. So that gave you experience to be the owner of the franchise, the AMP Entrepreneur's Source.
Correct. The first franchise I owned, I had for 10 years, and it was called the Entrepreneur Source. And it was a consulting franchise, just like the FCC is, franchise consulting company, that we helped people find the right franchise for themselves.
Oh, Ray, you
stole
my question.
So it sounds like you have a lot of experience in that area.
I do, because I've continued to do that the whole time. So I've got 14 years of experience. You know, I've helped hundreds of people get into business ownership for themselves. I can say I've helped hundreds of people find out business ownership may not be the right path for them, or franchising's not. I've met just a ton of great people all across the country, and I've done it all, you know, all via the phone. Most of the work I do is via the phone. And I finally placed a franchisee in Fairbanks, Alaska this year. So I've got Alaska checked off the state where I placed a franchise.
Oh,
wow.
You have to invite him on the show. We've never had somebody from Alaska on the show. You'll have to invite him on the show.
Yeah.
We can do that. He has an Arc Point Labs. So absolutely.
Oh, it's an Arc Point Labs. That's cool.
Awesome. So before we got segued down to Alaska, which obviously I'm somewhat ADHD, back to the Entrepreneur Source. So you spent 10 years there, and you've now been with FCC for over two.
Correct.
How is the differential? What do you find was different between the two?
You know, a lot of it was is the same. You know, same skill sets, helping people. The big things between 10 – well, it's actually very similar now. Between the people 14 years ago and the clients today is the pain. People have pain as far as, hey, I don't like my job. Maybe I'm traveling all the time. I'm looking for quality of life. Those are similar. Whenever we had the economy crash in 2008 with the Entrepreneur Source, people couldn't find jobs. And so that's one of the reasons why they were getting into business ownership. They were like, hey, I now want to be in control of my life. You know, the workforce has changed, and so now I need to adapt to that. And now we're kind of back to where we were in 2004, where unemployment's low. But people, again, want control. Or they want to build a safety net saying, hey, you know what, I've got a great job. You know, maybe I want to build a safety net over 3 to 5 years to replace my income, to give me a choice, or if I get laid off again, because we hear that all the time, that they've replaced their income, so it'd be like a semi-absentee ownership franchise. Or the other big thing now that's different from back in 2004 when I first got into this, there's a lot of retirees out there that have an income gap where they can't see how they're going to make it through retirement without running out of money. So they're looking at, what can I do to maintain lifestyle or have income, more income coming in retirement? So those are some of the changes that have gone on.
So what you're saying is that there's people that have retired already that are not now going into franchising?
I see that a lot. You know, they either want to maintain lifestyle, so they want manage the manager, you know, semi-absentee ownership. You know what, we want to travel, but we need to have more, you know, more money come in. Or they've been forced into retirement, but they're not ready financially for retirement, or they may not be ready mentally. They're like, hey, you know, I'm 67, 68. I want to keep active. I still want to keep doing something for the next 5 to 7 years. So they get into business ownership. I see that a lot.
So they want
that's
to
pretty
travel.
Much the demographic right now of the people that are seeking franchises?
I'm sorry, there were two people talking. I didn't hear the question.
So
that's pretty much the demographic these days of people seeking franchises. They want something a little different in their lives.
They do, and they don't know what it is. And Leland probably can attest to this too. Most people that I work with, they think maybe they want to get into something, but when you start talking to them, it's really not what they want to get into. So we've kind of got to be like Columbo and do investigations and start understanding, hey, what's the goals, needs, expectations you want out of business ownership? What's the income, lifestyle, wealth, equity goals you want out of business ownership? What's going to be the exit strategies? You know, you're going to build something up and sell it. Now, I'm working with a client right now. Their game plan is to do the franchise for 15 years and then turn it over to their only son. And so it's going to be a legacy type franchise.
So
understanding things like that.
You said with the specifically going back to the people that have retired and going into franchising, you said a lot of them like to travel. So my question is do they all travel in these like 100-yard massive buses that have fire flames alongside the buses?
You know, sometimes I think my parents may qualify for that sometimes, but a lot of them, it's traveling just all over the place. But yes, I have seen that, yes.
Yeah, so have I. That's the
yes.
Killers of Franchising Mobile Studio 1 that Ray drives.
yeah. So, yeah, I own the 45-foot diesel pusher. And that is our mobile lab, definitely.
Number one. My lab topic is my number two, but that's okay. Wow, I love this show. I really do. I learned so much.
Yeah,
yeah, Ray, go ahead.
And the paint job is called Firestorm, so.
Excellent.
Bright red, yellows, and blacks, and. Anyway,
it's bigger than the old Kiss party bus was.
But it's fun. It's fun to drive. I can tell you that. I enjoy it. I'll be going to Grapevine, Texas in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to that.
Hey, people see you and I bet you they get out of the way.
They do. They do. And, you know, stop at a rest stop, and it's not unusual for someone to say, oh, that's really cool. Can I see the inside? And I say, sure, come on in.
And then they're never seen from again. Oh, no. As you can tell, sometimes we're not as serious as others. So
that's a good thing.
Go ahead.
So if someone's interested in getting a franchise, who do they call? And how do they call?
They call me. I can be reached very easily. You can find me on the Franchise Consulting Company's website, or they can give me a call directly on my phone, 864-346-5277, or they can email me. I'm real easy to find. Or I get several people find me on LinkedIn. You can find me that way too.
Or as of now, you can find Doug, Leland, and Larry on their bio pages on thepillarsoffranchising.com. And with that note, we'll bring Leland back on. And I want to ask first Doug and then Leland. You talked to Doug, you mentioned quality of life. So, and I always think of myself as kind of I get clients and I'm trying to figure out how to market them and build strategies to market them. So I always kind of feel I'm a digital therapist. So when you mention people want the quality of life, how do you help people determine what the best franchise is to improve their quality of life or quality of balance of life or whatever you want to call it?
You know, the franchise is important. Don't get me wrong. But really getting them to think about themselves, and most people I work with, and Leland's probably the same way, they never stop to think about things. They never stop to think, what's important to me? You know, and a lot of times when I start talking to clients, especially executives, they're like, you know what, I work a 12-hour day, I'm missing my kid's soccer game, or I'm traveling, you know, 5 days a week, and I'm missing everybody, kids growing up, I'm missing time with family. That's quality of life for them. They're like, I want to go through and be able to do that. Or with a retiree, they're like, you know what, I've had a great career, and now I want to enjoy it, but I don't want to worry about things financially. So it could be, you know, I know I can do this, and I can, according to my accountant, you know, I'm going to run out of money by the time I'm 80 or something. But now I want to go through and bridge that gap because people are living longer, but I also want to be able to travel and do other things. And so that's where understanding those things first, I can find the franchise that matches up with them. I mean, there's 82 different business categories. And then getting people to think outside the box, that, you know, Leland used the example, somebody may not, I woke up in the morning and say, hey, I want to be in the porta potty business. But if it's delivering this whole laundry list of things we identified, doesn't that make sense? And so getting them to think of it as a vehicle to get them to where they want to go.
Yeah, the porta potty business, I don't think you're going to track me to that. Leland, your thoughts?
somewhat along those same lines, the challenge for many people is they've grown up in a corporate environment. They've had structure. They've had a lot of things dictated to them. They've always been in a, forgive the terminology, but kind of a serve mentality, without necessarily having the opportunity to really put forward ideas, to really do things that, you know, they might view as really great ideas. The franchise, the business ownership, takes them out of the control of someone else and gives them the opportunity to step up and to really have presence to do what they want, to be able to demonstrate what they want, and maybe for the first time to really spread their wings. And to me, not so much quality of life, but that, you know, that self-attainment, that achievement that they've been looking for, that maybe they haven't had, that to me is a very important piece for many people. And business ownership and franchising allow them to have that opportunity.
I like the phrase you used, releasing boundaries, because that's what it does. That's what business ownership does. It does release the boundaries that you've been told you had all your life, you know, from, you know, mom and dad telling you, you got to go to school, and you got to get this degree, and you got to. And then you find yourself in something that you really have no interest in, and with business ownership, all of a sudden, those boundaries are released.
And now here's the challenge. What you have to do is you have to ensure you don't reinstall those boundaries on all the people who are working with and for you.
Yeah, that can be a challenge.
So, yeah, wasn't that low? Yes.
That was good. I mean, you just tied back into everything Larry said. Ooh.
I know. You see, you didn't think I was paying attention.
Oh, I assumed everyone does. I'm stupid that way. I think the earth revolves around me, so what the hell?
There you go.
So, just as a quick reminder, for the folks that are listening on the website, I can see a whole bunch of you there. You can ask questions in the live chat function, and we'll ask them to our wonderful guests. So remember, if you're listening at the site, like I know a bunch of you are, please post your questions. You can dial in. We got a couple minutes left to 323-580-5755. And instant news, a couple of quick fun facts for Ray. Our Alexa.com ranking, you know we've been tracking that, Ray. In the last 3 weeks, mm-hmm. we've improved another 1.2 million spaces.
Ooh.
We've improved 23 million spaces since we've launched. And I just saw coming into our inbox, we have our first past guest blog submission from somebody that Doug and Leland, I think, know, Holly Ford. You remember Holly? She sent. So we'll post her blog tomorrow after this show goes to the podcast directories. So I know when I finally went into business of my own, I was in corporate America. The wife had had a heart attack, died, and it was one of those things that I kept looking at it saying, life's too short to work for somebody else. I'm going to go off and do my own thing. And sadly, at that point in time, or actually happily, had I gone and bought a franchise, I wouldn't have met Ray, and then we wouldn't be here. How many people have... Is it always change of life like that, change of life event that causes people to go and buy a franchise, or is it just kind of a natural evolution most of the time?
Go ahead,
Doug. I think most of the time people want to be self-sufficient. Some of it is change of life. Hey, I'm unemployed. I've got to do something, so I'm going to put this as an iron in the fire. I think some of it is, again, going back to quality of life, people wanting to be self-sufficient of, hey, I hate my job. I hate what I'm doing. What can I do different? I may be employed, but let me go through and find something that's more meaningful. You know, everybody's a little bit different, but those are a lot of the things that I see.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I was thinking about the fact that almost in a reverse way, quite a number, you know, as people are going through the process, and I don't want to scare people off, but quite a number of my clients have either encountered personal marriage issues, et cetera, or a health issue has come up, an illness has come up, and that has caused them to step back and not pursue it. The change of personal circumstances has a significant impact on it. But at the same time, you know, even, and Doug mentioned it before, retirees. I have a fair number of retirees who, after 2 or 3 years, are going, I can't stand retirement anymore. I need to find something to do or I'm going to go stir crazy. And, you know, and they'll have their criteria, but retirement is not always what it's cranked out to be for all people. And there's only so much, you know, of certain activities you could do. And they come back. So retirement as a change of life is often a catalyst for wanting to come back and business ownership or franchise ownership. I also think there are people who are very calculating in the sense that they've decided when they're ready for business ownership and contact us at that time. Or they start a year or two before to investigate what's out there and to become knowledgeable to make that decision. And they know it's going to be a period of time between financing, finding the right franchise, time to set up, et cetera. But who've made up their minds either at age or at financial security or kids out of college and no longer footing that bill. There are definite triggers that people have that they use that we see that determines when they're ready for business ownership.
Ray, how long did it take you to decide on? Ooh, we lost Ray.
Oh no.
We lost Ray. Oh no. Well,
good, we can talk about him now. Okay.
Yes, we can. No. So, all right, since we lost him and he can't talk about how long his, I think it took him he said 18 months to decide. One thing, we only have 5 minutes left, and you made me, Leland, as your time, made me think about this, is I've seen articles in the news, and Ray's back. I still get to ask
Ray
my question, Ray. that says that millennials are starting to be attracted to franchising. Are you seeing that?
Yes. Wait. And is that to Ray?
No, that's to you first and then Doug. And then Ray can chime in.
They are. There's a little different, well, in my experience, there's a little different wrinkle with the millennials. More often than not, there's a financing issue that needs to be understood. Typically, they're not going to finance it on their own. They may require signature or co-signature signing for the loan, or parents are involved in some way. And that needs to be worked through up front to understand kind of what that enables or allows them to do. It's not the same situation as, let's say, someone in their 50s who is now looking at business ownership.
Doug.
Yeah, I find it interesting talking to millennials, and they tell me, oh, yeah, I'm planning on retiring when I'm, 55. And I say, oh, that's fantastic. What do you plan on doing? And then there's silence. they don't know. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, that leaves a lot of time between 55 and the rest of your life. I hope you have a plan on doing something besides sitting in a rocking chair.
Doug, your thoughts on millennials and franchising?
Yeah, I see that, and I've actually helped some get into business. So definitely, because millennials are looking at they change jobs a lot. And then they've finally come to the point where I definitely want to be in control. And there's actually a few franchises out there. That's who they want as their franchisees. They want millennials. Two that I can think of right now is a franchise called You Move Me, and the other one's called Shack Shine. And, they're for the people that are 30 years old, 35 years old. If they're lower investments, they're going to start off as owner-operators, and then gradually as they develop confidence and develop the skills, then bring on managers and run it that way. But you're definitely seeing that trend.
Ooh, so that was you moving to Shack Shine?
I definitely admire people who start out life with that kind of a plan in mind, and basically they plan on being an entrepreneur and getting into business. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen that way with a lot of us.
Well, it doesn't. It didn't happen with me. I mean, I was 35 when I got into my first franchise, but I didn't have the money I needed, so I had to go talk to my parents to see if they would help back me. And I think when you're that age, for me, I had a proven track record with my parents of saying, hey, look, I'm responsible. Here's my career. They've seen it. I was able to make things happen. I showed responsibility. I think if you're somebody young and you don't show that, it's kind of hard to get your funding. But if you have parents that believe in you or somebody believes in you because you've proven yourself, you can find the funding. And again, some of these franchises that are low entry, they may only be $60,000 to get into, which I know is a lot of money, but compared to, a lot of franchises that are into the six figures, it's a way somebody could get into it and start building business experience and franchise experience.
Okay, Ray, we got 2 minutes left. You got your last question.
My last question. So, what is my last question, Fred? Tell me.
I don't know. You got a minute and 30 seconds now.
So, basically, I think you are all part of the franchise group, and probably we should find out how to get a hold of you that way. So how is that done?
So for me, best way, you can go onto your website. My bio is there. LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the Franchise Consulting Company homepage, and you can see me there. So you can contact me through the website. Those are probably the three easiest places.
Ooh, you're smooth mentioning the pillars of franchising website first. Go ahead.
Ditto. Well, it aggregates a lot of really good information, and one of the things
seconds,
that comes to mind is, so we've had these really strong people on our radio show, and I think one of the things I'd like to get is Larry and Dr. Maria Malater on together. And I think those two would have a great show, because they both seem to be the epitome of what I think we're going to be entrepreneurs and franchise owners are going to be facing, and that's basically a lack of, and I hate to use the word, but employees, but that's what's going to be happening. And I think there's going to be a wave of how to treat prospective employees the right way. And I think those two on a show would be something that we, Fred and I, need to do.
All right. And we're out of time, folks. So we'll work out what Ray said and listen next week to the Pillars of Franchising.
Thanks for everyone.